The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, they did it. The Los Angeles Dodgers, they are the repeat champions. This is the first repeat champion we have had in baseball since the Yankees three-peated in the early 2000s, okay? So, what was that, 2001? I think it was 99, 2000, 2001, that era. So, like, it's been over 20 years since we have had a repeat champion, and the Dodgers did it. And let me tell you, I said it before the baseball playoffs started that, to me, the baseball playoffs are the best out of all the sports and the playoffs. I just feel they just, it's always tense and it's always on edge. And this World Series was the epitome of why. I mean, I hate the Dodgers. I don't ever root for the Dodgers. And I was all about Toronto in this one. But man, what an insane World Series from both teams. I mean, this was obvious. These were the two best teams in the league, and it showed. I mean, it just came down to every single at-bat, every single pitch, every defensive play, every managerial move. At the end of the day, this was just an excellent World Series. So congratulations to the Los Angeles Dodgers. It pains me to say it because, I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, and I just can't stand seeing this team win, but hey, man, they won, and they did it again 2 years in a row. So in Game 6, they took care of business. They got the win 3-1 over Toronto. And Yamamoto pitched 6 innings, had 6 strikeouts, and it was a crazy game-ending double play to win this one as well because Toronto was looking like they were getting ready to potentially at least score a couple of runs in this one to potentially tie it up in the 9th inning. Nah, it's a game-ending double play. And then in Game 7, I mean, what a way to come down to it. So the Dodgers got the win 5-4 in 11 innings. And it's only fitting that this World Series goes into extra innings on the final Game 7 of it all. And I mean, it was so tense because at first it looked like, oh, cool, Toronto comes right out. They got this 3-0 lead. Then the Dodgers kind of start chipping away at this lead. And I'm like, I'm not liking this at all. I'm not liking this at all. So it's 3-0. Then it's 3-1. Then the Dodgers are able to tie it up 3-3. Then Toronto takes the lead 4-3. And it's just looking like, all right, they've got this. It's 4-3. They could take this. And no. One of the craziest managerial moves, like, you just got to give it up to Dave Roberts. Because I know a lot of people like to make it seem like just because they've got a lot of talent on their team that his job is super easy when it's really the exact opposite. This dude has to, like, determine what players to take out and to put in. And he's got literally he's got Hall of Fame level players already on his team. And it's like you got to decide where you got to place them, when to put them in, when to put them out, and then who to put in. And Rojas, this dude has had a terrible World Series. He has had a terrible playoff run. He has just not been playing well. But Roberts had to put him in, and he ended up putting him in, and he ended up hitting the game-tying home run to send it into extra innings. Then we go into extra innings, and he makes a huge play. You know, Toronto's got they got the bases loaded or they got a guy on first and third. Either way, they've got a guy who's capable of scoring on third base. And Rojas makes the play, the defensive play in the 10th inning to just boom, gun it to home plate and stop the Toronto Blue Jays from scoring that run. Yamamoto comes in the extra innings. And he, mind you, this guy just pitched in Game 6. So this guy's arm's got to be close to falling off. But this is for the World Series, so no one gives a fuck at this point. And he comes out and he just does his thing. Dodgers do their defensive thing because Toronto's looking like there's a potential that they could score here in the 10th inning. No, they don't. And then the Dodgers in the 11th inning, Will Smith gets jiggy with it and hits the game-winning home run to give the Dodgers the 5-4 lead. You know, Toronto's got hope in the bottom of the 11th, but it was snatched right from them with a game-winning double play to end the game, and the Los Angeles Dodgers are the champions, the repeat champions. Yamamoto ended up winning the MVP, as he should, because he pitched his lights out. Game two, he pitched a complete game. Game six, he went six innings pitched, got the win in that one, and then, of course, came in game seven to seal the deal for the Dodgers, and what a season. Also, shout out to Clayton Kershaw. Great way for him to end his career. Three-time World Series champion now. He gets to ride off in the sunset the way he should. Mookie Betts gets his fourth ring. Freddie Freeman gets his third ring. I mean, these guys are just, they're just excellent baseball players, and a very well-deserved season from them. Like I said, you know, once the playoffs began, I knew you could not count this Dodgers team out, no matter how shaky the regular season was for them. I kind of feel like those injuries, especially at the starting pitcher position, really preserved a lot of their pitchers for this playoff run. And here they are as the repeat champions. All right, so let's move on to week 9 and week 9 of football. We had a few crazy games, but we had some upsets too. So let's get right into it, beginning with the Indianapolis Colts at the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Steelers took care of business. I mean, a lot of people were worried about them on defense, and they answered the bell in this one. They got the win 27-20, but the Steelers' defense was all over Daniel Jones. Not only were they having him run for his life, but they caused 6 turnovers as well. A few interceptions, a few fumbles. Every player on defense pretty much was a factor in this one. They were able to set the offensive up in great field position, and they were able to do exactly what I said they were going to do, and that is contain Jonathan Taylor. Dude only had 45 rushing yards in this one. He just was not able to get going, and the Steelers got a huge, huge win over the Indianapolis Colts 27-20. Probably the craziest game of the day was between the Chicago Bears at the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, back and forth from the jump. The Bengals come right out, get the kick return for a touchdown, go up 7-0, and then it's just legitimately back and forth the whole way, back and forth. It actually looks at one point like the Bears got this. They are all about it. And Joe motherfucking Flacco, this dude just does not give up. And he takes this team, like, he takes them all the way down the field, sets them up a good field position, but then he throws a terrible interception. But the defense, the Cincinnati Bengals defense, actually does take care of business. They get the ball back, and then they come out, and they take the freaking lead. And they only have about, I think, 18 seconds left, and the Bengals have the lead. And the Bears have to get into field goal range in order, because the Bengals have a one-point lead, because or a two-point lead, because they missed the extra point. They didn't miss the extra point, or maybe they did at some point. This was one of the weirdest fucking games of all time. But anyways, the Bengals had the lead, and the Bears just needed a field goal to win this one, and instead, the Bengals defense just shits the bed completely. I mean, the Bears only have 18 seconds left. It's pretty difficult to get down the field with 18 seconds and, you know, get in the field goal range, but let alone do what the Bengals did. I mean, the Bears did. And the Bears, they throw their tight end. He catches the ball. He just busts through terrible tackling and is able to score the game-winning touchdown to take the Bears home with the win 47-42. But Joe Flacco cannot overlook what this dude did yesterday. 31-47. 470 yards and 4 touchdowns. Dude's 41 years old. Just got traded to this team, what, 3-4 games ago? I mean, he just joined this team. And he's balling like that. Now, unfortunately, it was on the losing end. But what a turnaround for this team on the offensive side of the ball. Just to get Joe Flacco to throw 470 yards. It definitely helps to have T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase making the big plays like they did. But just a huge game from Flacco. Higgins also had a huge game, 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. But it was all about the Bears, man. They had some crazy trick plays. And, you know, even though as back and forth as this game was, it was a very, very weird game. It had some insane – that's why I was confused on that extra point, because I think at some point they did miss an extra point. Regardless, it was a crazy game, and the Bears walked away with that win. Then we had the Minnesota Vikings at the Detroit Lions. The Vikings came out swinging in this one, and they got the win 27-24. J.J. McCarthy, he had 2 touchdowns through the air, 1 touchdown rushing on the ground. This was his first game back from injury, and it was a very, very solid performance from him. Also defensively, they really took care of business. The Vikings did. They made some really big plays on the defensive side of the ball to set their offense up in good field position for some scoring plays. But they were able to get some takeaways. They were able to just really keep Jared Goff from really taking over this game, even though he had solid numbers, 25 for 37, 284 yards, 2 touchdowns. Laporta had a solid game, 97 yards and a touchdown. It was just this Vikings offense was just able to keep ahead, and the defense was able to just take care of business. And, you know, these are division battles. Division battles are always iffy, and the Vikings were able to get the better of the Lions in this one. Crazy game of the day just because of who lost. The Carolina Panthers at the Green Bay Packers. You know, I told you, this Panthers team is going to be weird this year. They're going to be in every game. And so far, they've pretty much been in every game. And they were able to get a sneaky win against the Packers in this one, 16-13. It was not a pretty game at all for the Panthers, or really the Packers. The Panthers, they just were able to keep their head above water. Rico Dowdle had 130 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns, so they keep riding Dowdle, and they get wins when they ride Dowdle. So I'm kind of sensing you just need to go to Rico Dowdle, and you're bound to get some wins for the Carolina Panthers. Jordan Love, solid game, 26 for 37, 273 yards, but also an interception, real bad interception too, that really basically cost the Packers in this one, but just a very, very weird game from the Packers. The Packers' 2 losses are to the Panthers and the Browns, 2 of the worst teams in the league. But the Panthers are over 500 for the first time in years. I think since 2021, I recall. I could be wrong, but it's a few years since they've been over 500 at this point in the season. They are 5-4 on the season. So I told you, Panthers may not be the best team in the league this year, but they're going to be in it in every game. They're going to push every team they play to the brink, and that's exactly what they did to the Packers in Green Bay, nonetheless. But they got the win, 16-13. Then we had the Los Angeles Chargers at the Tennessee Titans. A lot more close of a matchup than expected, but the Chargers got the win, 27-20. Justin Herbert, huge day, 19 for 29, 250 yards and 2 touchdowns. Also had 57 rushing yards and a touchdown. Now some unfortunate news. They lost their offensive lineman, Joe Alt. You know, he already missed, I believe, 3 games earlier in the season, and he is officially done for the season. He re-injured that ankle yesterday, and now it was announced today he has to have surgery, and he will be out for the rest of the season. So that's probably going to have a huge effect on this Chargers team, but we'll see. I mean, this division of theirs is up for grabs between the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Broncos. So that could be a huge blow, but at the same time, who knows at this point, because it kind of feels like this division is just really going to be rotating, but not good news at all for the Chargers, even though they got a big win yesterday over the Titans. Then we had the Atlanta Falcons at the New England Patriots. This actually ended up being a very, very good game. Came down to the extra point. Patriots got the win, 24-23. The Falcons were able to almost tie this game up at the end. But the unfortunate thing is their kicker missed the extra point. As a matter of fact, this has been a huge theme for the Falcons season. I mean, it's kind of been a theme for them since last season, but we're just talking about this season right now, and it's been bad. They've missed extra points. They've missed big field goals. They've missed small field goals. They just are terrible when it comes to the special teams this year, and they could have taken the game into overtime yesterday, and unfortunately, they missed that extra point, and the Patriots are just able to hang on, but their defense really taking care of business. Drake May, another big game, 19 for 29, 259 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then on the opposite side of things for the Falcons, London, 118 yards and 3 touchdowns. So they're getting a lot of offensive production on the Falcons side of the ball here. It's just the kicking. They may want to just go for two-point conversions at this point in time, because I don't think field goals are going to help the Atlanta Falcons at all this season. Then we had the San Francisco 49ers at the New York Giants. Niners got a big win, 34-24. Mac Jones, 19 for 24, 235 yards and two touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey, 106 yards and a touchdown on the ground. And through the air, 67 yards and a touchdown. Just another solid day from Christian McCaffrey. And a nice day for Mac Jones as well. And another terrible loss from the New York Giants. Then we had the Denver Broncos at the Houston Texans. Another weird game from the Denver Broncos, but their defense just continues to keep them in it. They get the win 18-15. Unfortunately for the Texans, C.J. Stroud took a big hit, and he ended up leaving the game midway with a concussion. Who knows if he's going to be playing this week, just because, you know, concussions are always just give or take. It just is day by day type of thing. But he missed the rest of the game, and I kind of feel like that had a huge effect on how the rest of this game was played. It was pretty much all field goals from the Texans, but the Broncos defense just kept them in it. And Bo Nix was able to put together some drives there in the fourth quarter. He went 18 for 37, 173 yards and two touchdowns, and a Broncos win 18-15. Then we had another weird-ass game that came down to a two-point conversion. Jacksonville Jaguars at the Las Vegas Raiders. The Jaguars hung on to this one, got the win 30-29. But like I said, the Raiders were in it. They were able to get the big touchdown, and they could either go for the extra point, tie it up, or go for the two-point conversion win. They decided to go for the win. Can't say I blame them, just because the Raiders season is not, it's obvious. I mean, they're 2-6, so it's not like they're a Super Bowl-bound team, so why not try and go for the win in this one? And they failed, but hey, man, they got Brock Bowers back at tight end. Huge game from him, 127 yards and three touchdowns. Geno Smith, dude is always give or take. This game, it was take, man. He took it all. 29 for 39, 284 yards and four touchdowns. I mean, he just, you know, it's either he has a terrible game where it's four interceptions, or he has a great game where it's four touchdowns. But regardless of how his game went, it was all for naught, because the Jaguars ended up hanging on to this one. Also, record field goal in this one by the Jaguars kicker. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. I think it's Little. I think his last name is Little. Jesus Christ, I cannot remember. I should have written it down because we all thought it would have been my dude Aubrey with the Cowboys, who would have ended up with the record. But no, it was homeboy on the Jaguars, 68-yard field goal. That is the record now for the longest field goal in the history of the league. So 68 yards. You're up next, Aubrey. Let's see if you can hit maybe 70 yards. But regardless, Jaguars got the win in this one. Then we had the New Orleans Saints at the Los Angeles Rams. This one is exactly as expected. The Rams slaughtered the Saints 34-10. Matthew Stafford went 24 for 32 with 281 yards and four touchdowns. Kyren Williams on the ground had 114 yards and a touchdown. And Puka Nacua had 95 yards and a touchdown. And basically everybody on this Rams offense had a touchdown. So Rams just keep on cruising. Got the big win over the Saints. Then we had the Kansas City Chiefs at the Buffalo Bills, and the Buffalo Bills came to play in this one. Their defense took care of business. So the Chiefs, it is all Patrick Mahomes. That is all it is. He's got to run, do all the running. They have absolutely zero ground attack. They're able, once they get in the red zone, they're able to score with their running backs, or even now that Rashee Rice is back, he's also added that extra where you could just hand him off the ball and he's just really quick and squiggly, and he's real difficult to get to tackle in the red zone. So he's been scoring a lot of rushing touchdowns. But for the most part, they're pretty much only getting their rushing from Patrick Mahomes, and they're getting a lot of their plays on just Patrick Mahomes' prayers, and it caught up with them in this game. It just goes to show you what's going to happen to this offense when they go up against a really solid defense, and this Bills team really took care of business. This is actually technically one of the worst games Patrick Mahomes has had statistically. I mean, he's still Patrick Mahomes, and he still made really big plays. I mean, the Chiefs were still in striking distance at the end of the game. As a matter of fact, you know, the Bills, they were trying to run down the clock. They weren't able to get the first down. They were able to get in field goal position for a 46-yarder, and their kicker just missed it. It doinked off, but there was only 22 seconds left at that point in time. Luckily, their defense just held it down. They were able to make sure that the Chiefs weren't able to get in the scoring position, and the Bills held on to this one 28-21. Josh Allen had a great game, 23-26. So practically a perfect game for him, 273 yards and a touchdown. James Cook continues his excellent season as well. He had 114 yards on the ground, and Dalton Kincaid had 101 yards and a touchdown through the air. And just an overall excellent performance from the Bills. But this is regular season Bills. We all know it doesn't really matter until we see what happens in the postseason, because if they face off in the postseason, chances are it's going to be 28-21 Chiefs. But we'll see. Then Sunday night football matchup was terrible. We had the Seattle Seahawks at the Washington Commanders, and the Seahawks just obliterated the Commanders. It wasn't even close. As a matter of fact, it was done at halftime. Sam Darnold pitched a perfect game in this one. As a matter of fact, at halftime, I believe he was 17 for 17. That's how amazing of a game Sam Darnold had. Ended up going 21 for 24, 330 yards and four touchdowns, and a 38-14 win over the Commanders. Some bad news for Washington, though. Jaden Daniels, it just kind of feels like every week he comes back from injury, he gets re-injured. Well, this week, it was the worst of all injuries. He dislocated his elbow, and you knew right off the bat, because it was one of those where his elbow, you just saw it. You just saw it on the ground, and you're like, oh, shit. So he's going to be out, definitely for the time being. Could potentially be season ending. You just never know. It's always, you got to take a look at the MRI, but even so, it just is one of those seasons for Daniels, where it's like he just keeps on getting injured. It's just not Washington's year. You could just tell. We're at the midway point of the season, and from what we're seeing on the field with them, it's just injury after injury, because also they lost their cornerback, Lattimore, to an ACL injury, so he's out for the rest of the season. This defense really has underperformed this year. As far as Dan Quinn defenses go, this is just not what a Dan Quinn defense normally looks like. And I think a lot of it is because their offense just has not been able to put it together because of all the Daniels injuries that he's just been in and out of the lineup. And now they got to rely on Marcus Mariota the rest of the way. So good luck, Washington. I think it's just not your year. And it's definitely not Jaden Daniels' year, unfortunately. It's just one of those terrible seasons where it's just injury after injury after injury for him. So that's just where they're at. So moving on to Monday Night Football. We have the Arizona Cardinals at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 3.5-point favorite. Still don't know who's going to be the quarterback. It's looking more like it's going to be Jacoby Brissett. Kyler Murray has a chance of playing, I guess, but I don't really think it matters. This Arizona offense is just awful. They've had a ton of injuries, even outside of Kyler Murray's injuries. They're on like their 12th running back at this point. They can't really get anything going. They're just they're not a good team at all. They have some things you could point out on the defensive side of the ball that are okay, but I actually just kind of feel like this is going to be a Dallas-dominated game where I just kind of feel like offensively they're going to put it together and just keep on scoring. And while their defense is terrible, I think the defense is going to be able to do enough to actually get the win in this one. I don't think they're going to blow anybody out of the water. I really wouldn't be shocked if the Cardinals are able to score some points for sure. But, you know, just with all the injuries that the Cardinals have had this year, and just the Cowboys are coming off of a loss last week, and I just kind of feel like the offense is really going to put it together this week. I feel like they're just going to go off, and I've got the Cowboys winning 41-20. Moving on to basketball, because now that we've got a couple of weeks under our belts with basketball, we can now do the NBA power rankings, in my opinion, because they're all lined up. I kind of feel like a few of these teams probably not going to be hanging for a while, but there is one team that I am not shocked, and they are my number one team. So let's get started with the top 10 NBA power rankings for this week, beginning with number one. The defending champion Oklahoma City Thunder have started the season 7-0. SGA, the defending MVP of last year, averaging 33 points per game. So he's picked up right where he's left off. The Oklahoma City Thunder's picked up right where they left off. They do have some injuries. Chet Holmgren, unfortunately, is on the IR right now. Jalen Williams is, unfortunately, on the IR right now. So that means they're going to get better once they get those two back. But it's just they just look great. There's nothing bad you could say about this team. They look like the defending champs, and they're playing like the defending champs, so they got to be placed at number one like the defending champs do. Then at number two on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have my Los Angeles Lakers. They are 5-2 on this season. Luka, of course, having a fantastic year. Just averaging 40 points per game, you know, just balling uncontrollably. Unfortunately, you know, he did miss a few games due to injury, but that's just going to happen. But he's balling uncontrollably. Austin Reeves is balling uncontrollably. LaRavia, where the fuck did this dude come from? He's having a fantastic start. Marcus Smart doing exactly what I thought Marcus Smart was going to do, come in and be scrappy on the defensive side of the ball. And hell, even DeAndre Ayton, he's looking pretty solid right now. I mean, he's not Shaq, of course, but hey, he's adding some help in the paint, which is exactly what we needed. And we don't even have LeBron playing, y'all. This team is looking really damn good. And I had to put them at number two because they actually look like what I expect. As a matter of fact, they look better than expected because I expected them to kind of have to, you know, kind of gel a little bit better. And actually, they look pretty damn good right now. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings at the San Antonio Spurs. Overall record of 5-1. Just suffered their first loss of the season yesterday. But I mean, Victor Wembanyama is on a motherfucking tear this year. This is Wemby's year. I kind of feel like it. Just buckle up, y'all. He's going to be all we talk about all season long. Right now, he's averaging 27 points per game, 14 rebounds per game, 3 assists per game, 5 blocks per game. He's averaging 2 steals per game. He's in on every single motherfucking stat right now. He's in on every motherfucking game right now. I felt like the Spurs were going to have to ease into the season. Wemby was like, nah, bitch, we're starting out the season hot, and we're going to be competing with your Los Angeles Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder all season long. And I said, buckle up for the season of Wemby. Don't be shocked if he ends up winning the MVP. Don't be shocked if the San Antonio Spurs are dominating this year. They've got a ways for me to believe in them as a championship level team, but they still, De'Aaron Fox, he hasn't even played yet. So just wait for the Spurs team. They are looking real good right now, and they're probably going to get even better as the season wears on. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Milwaukee Bucks. Overall record of 4-2. And buckle up for a season of Giannis as well. Giannis has come right out the gate, averaging 34 points per game, 13 rebounds per game, and 7 assists per game. So he is averaging a double-double per game, near a triple-double per game. He is just having a fantastic year and just balling. It feels like every single game he is just putting up monster numbers. And then he's also, they picked up Miles Turner this offseason, who was with the Indiana Pacers last year, and he was so scrappy for the Pacers, such a huge part of why they were in the championship last year. And now he's really stepping in with the Bucks and really taking over that same exact role and really adding in for what I feel is kind of surprising right now for Milwaukee, because I didn't expect much from them, but Giannis is out of his mind right now. Then at number five, five on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Philadelphia 76ers. Overall record of 5-1. And Tyrese Maxey, talk about somebody who's come right out the gate. He's averaging 34 points per game and just really dominating every game. But also their rookie, VJ Edgecombe. He's having a phenomenal year as well. He and Maxey are just boom, boom, right down the court, just looking real in sync with each other. And then you got Embiid, who's just slowly coming back from that knee injury. I kind of feel like he might be better served coming off of the bench and playing limited minutes. Just because of the injuries he suffered over the years, I kind of feel like you may want to save the wear and tear for the end of the year and just kind of ease him into the beginning of the season and just kind of give him this bench role. I mean, he may not want to do that, but it's kind of been working for the 76ers so far. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Denver Nuggets. Overall record of 3-2. Nikola Jokic doing what he do. Averaging a triple-double this season already. 20 points per game, 14 rebounds per game, 11 assists per game. Yada, yada, yada. That's just typical Nikola Jokic. And then Jamal Murray, averaging 26 points per game. I mean, this actually just goes to show you, last year, the Denver Nuggets issues were the injuries. A healthy Jamal Murray is real. It really elevates this team to a whole other level. He was in and out of the lineup all last year. Gordon was in and out of the lineup last year. Brown was in and out of the lineup last year. It was just injury central last year, and it was just all Jokic, all games. And yes, he can get you the triple doubles, but they always need a Murray to step it up, or a Gordon to step it up, or a Brown to step it up. They need those dudes. And so far, those dudes have been performing, and you know, they just keep doing what they're doing, and they're healthy and looking really good right now. Then at number 7 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Houston Rockets, overall record of 3-2, Kevin Durant fitting right in with this team, averaging 27 points per game, and he and Şengün are just really boom. Just they look so good together. Şengün's averaging 22 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, 8 assists per game. This team, they still dominate in the paint like they were last year, and they just look really good. And I feel like they've got still some more room to grow, of course. But KD, like I told you, he was the missing link to this team so far, proving me right on that one. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Detroit Pistons, overall record of 4-2, Cade Cunningham picking up right where he left off last year, averaging 22 points per game. And Jaren Durant, oh, he's another guy who's just dominating the paint, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the Pistons are doing exactly what they did last year. Cunningham, he's great offensively, but these guys are scrappy in the paint. They're great at getting rebounds, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds. It's just the Detroit Pistons play dirty, ugly basketball, and I like it. And when I mean ugly basketball, I'm not like sloppy or anything. I mean like they're going to fuck you up in the paint kind of basketball. That's what I'm talking about. They can score the points with Cunningham, but Durant in the middle there is going to fuck you up. That's basically what's been going on with the Pistons. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the Chicago Bulls, overall record of 5-1. They just suffered their first loss of the season yesterday, I believe. It was either yesterday or the day before. It was over the weekend at some point. I kind of feel like the Bulls, yes, they're starting off the season hot, but I don't know how long it's going to last. They're that team I kind of look at like, I don't know if we're going to be talking about them a lot, but hey. They started off the season undefeated. They're playing excellent basketball right now. Really solid team basketball. Giddy, he's scoring the points. He's throwing some assists out there. Vucevic, he's dominating the paint with the rebounds, also getting some assists out there. Trey Jones, he's also out there helping. They're just playing excellent team basketball. I don't know how long it's going to last, but we got to talk about them because they're 5-1 on the season. And then rounding out the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, at the Cleveland Cavaliers, overall record of 4-3. Donovan Mitchell is averaging 30 points per game right now. Lonzo Ball, shockingly, he hasn't got injured yet. You know, he's hasn't played in like, what, 2-3 years because of the knees injuries that he suffered over the years. But he's playing. The minutes that he's getting, he's making the most of it. And he's actually looking really solid right now. If he's able to stay healthy, it looks like he's going to end up being a pretty solid piece for this Cleveland Cavaliers team. Evan Mobley having a pretty solid year as well. And then Jared Allen also. So, you know, this Cavaliers team, not as hot out the gate as they were last year. But, I mean, Donovan Mitchell still there, still scoring points. And this looks to be like a pretty good team, especially with that Lonzo Ball angle. If he just stays healthy, I kind of feel like he's going to be that dude who's very helpful in some key games where you're going to need another dude to step it up other than Donovan Mitchell. And they still have Garland coming back at some point this season as well. So expect the Cavaliers to get better as well. All right, y'all. Enjoy the rest of the week of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Wednesday.